Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you are listening to the Culture Vigilante Hour on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're here every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. We're very happy to be with you tonight. We are going to continue tonight our candidate vetting. I don't know about you, but I am really tired of the primary season. I will be so glad when August 8th arrives here. I bet most of the candidates probably feel that way, too. Tonight, we're going to be speaking to three candidates. We'll have Shane Scholer on, and Todd, he's running for Secretary of State. Todd Akin is running for the U.S. Senate, and Brad Lager for Lieutenant Governor. And I just came in to do this show for an hour. I've been outside all day trying to do the rain dance. I don't know if anybody else is as sick and tired of this heat as I am. Maybe that's why I'm so crabby. It's the heat. I'm just done with the heat. I need some rain. I think I've had probably an inch of rain since May, maybe in my house, maybe less than an inch of rain. It doesn't rain in Lake St. Louis. We're going to become the next Sahara Desert here. We are fortunate enough to be joined once again by Dave Court from Springfield. He's not playing softball tonight. We're happy to have Dave with us. How you doing tonight, Dave?
I'm good. How are you, Lisa?
I'm good. You just hanging out tonight?
I'm just hanging out, listening to you and Shane, and doing whatever I can to help out. I see your call screener didn't show tonight, so I'll be happy to do whatever
okay.
I can for you.
Yeah, thanks. I gave him the evening off tonight. I was going to try to fly solo, but I'm glad you're here. So, Dave, I know you really enjoy this candidate, this election season a lot more than I do. I'm just really done with this primary thing. I'm so tired of it. I'm so tired of the whole darn thing. So there's, you know, the campaigning has just reached it's not as bad as I guess it has been in the past. Some of the campaigning's a little negative, but, you know, just I'm done with it. And it seems to me, I don't know if it's been your impression, but it seems to me that either people have really already got their minds made up and they're just kind of floating along until the election, or they're just very disengaged. Do you feel that that's going on?
I don't feel it as much in the circles that I move in, and probably the circles that you move in, but the primary is not a highly engaged thing. It's very much, I mean, it's going to be the activists, and I think that's good for us at the grassroots level who are trying to get the limited government, small government thing, patriot thing going. That it is that way, but yeah, I don't think there's ever. I think you'll see, you know, when the primaries are settled and you got guys like Shane and Ed Martin and Bill Randall's out there slugging it out with a bunch of incumbents. I think you're going to see a lot more interest.
Well, you know, and we're going to, you know, after we get finished with this candidate vetting, we're going to talk a little bit more about other issues and address some of the culture issues that go along with politics a little bit more. But, you know, one thing that I do kind of want to warn people, I mean, we want people to get involved and we want them to be engaged. And at the same time, we don't want people to go over the edge and start worshiping these elected either. I mean, I think we've had that problem in the past where people invest so much emotionally in a candidate and they can't see the forest for the trees. And when you invest that much emotionally in a candidate, it's very hard to hold people accountable. And what I want to start talking about after this primary is we want to start thinking ahead to the future. What happens the day after the election? you know, we're going to put candidates in office. I think we're going to have a pretty good election year. I think it's going to be good for conservatives, regardless of what the polls are telling you now. But I think that we need to start thinking proactively now and start putting a game plan in place to keep people's feet to the fire, because we are on the edge. We need stuff to happen,
not only
on a national level, but on a state level. And
absolutely,
we need to be able to make sure we're holding people accountable. And when you invest emotionally in a candidate, it's a little bit harder to do that when they don't maybe move as fast as you think they need to move.
Well, yeah, I mean, the candidate is nothing but your employee. I mean, they work for you, and I mean, you don't get emotionally invested if you own a dry cleaner and the guy that's punching tickets at the front counter.
And I think people look at their elected a little differently. You know, they are very, people just really become attached to these candidates, and that's not a good thing. So I think that we kind of maybe need to change that dynamic a little bit and talk about that and get that out there and kind of put that out, you know, kind of put that idea out there so people kind of take charge of their, take charge of their candidates and look at it from that perspective.
And I think at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we can do a lot of that. I mean, you're right, absolutely. I mean, day one after the election, after the general election, you're going to start seeing pre-filed bills already. You're going to start seeing pre-filed bills that are going to hit on the first day, and we'd ought to start working those right away. Who's sponsoring this piece of crap, you know, and what do we do about it, and see the stuff we need to be getting behind and the stuff we hadn't ought to be getting behind.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, we can start sending the message, too, that there won't be a lot of bills filed. You know, when they're filing 2,000-plus bills a session, you know, we need to cut that number in half or maybe by three-quarters. You know, that stuff needs to stop, and we need to start getting that message out there, too. We had a little debate on Facebook earlier this week about, you know, what is the job of a legislator in Missouri? Well, you know, there are other jobs other than filing legislation. You know, they have other responsibilities, but it's so easy to file legislation. You know, it's just so easy to do that. You know, and people have been for so long, kind of, for lack of a better word, brainwashed or conditioned to think that the way to solve a problem is filing legislation. And next week, actually, we're going to get into talking about some of the ballot initiatives that are going up. You know,
I'm a little disappointed that we're not already hearing more about Amendment 2, you know, with the election only 2 weeks away.
Well, you tune in next week, Dave, because we're going to talk about Amendment 2 specifically.
Good. Let's do that Friday night.
Okay, we can do that Friday night as well.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you,
I'm against it, and I know somebody's coming along that's for it.
Yeah, I know. and you and I are on the same page with Amendment 2. I'm not real crazy about it, but...
Yeah.
But we do have one person with us tonight who's going to be involved in those ballot initiatives should he get elected in November, and that's Shane Scholer. He's running for Secretary of State. We've had some issues here in the last couple of weeks with some ballot initiatives, and we're going to talk to him about that a little bit. Something, though, I mean, I just laughed out loud. It's the first time I heard it today. With all of the negative campaigning that's been going on in the U.S. Senate race, and there's some going on for the Lieutenant Governor's race, I heard an ad today on the radio. It was just hilarious. It's a great ad. Who's ever writing the ads for Shane is doing a great job, but just take a listen to this ad.
Secretary Shanahan, we need you right away.
What is it?
We just received another liberal SOS. The conservatives are at it again, trying to lower taxes, defend their religious freedoms, and even trying to stop Obamacare. What do we do?
Don't worry. As long as we write the ballots and count the votes, there's no way the conservatives can win. Get Nixon on the phone. Let's go.
Robin Carnahan is at it again, abusing her authority as Secretary of State to punish conservatives. It's time for a new voice, and conservatives agree Shane Scholer is that new voice.
We have Shane Scholer with us tonight here on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thanks for being with us tonight, Shane. Welcome. Oops, let's turn his mic on. That would help.
Good to have Dave from back home in Springfield on as well.
Yeah, how are you doing tonight, Shane?
I'm doing well. Had a good day in the campaign trail, so it's great to catch up with you guys.
You've been all over the place.
So, yeah, we've been working hard. I tell people that I think it's always important you try to connect with as many voters as you can. So we've been doing that from day one since we got into this campaign.
So tell me, how's your campaign going, Shane? I thought your ad was just hilarious.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've told folks that, you know, I think it's important that sometimes you try to do something a little different. I kind of like the fact that it's a story, and so it kind of draws people in from the normal political ads that they hear and gets a chance to be able to get your message out there. And we think, I mean, my campaign team and wife and I, we feel very good about where we're at in this campaign. We've been working hard, as I said, from the very beginning. And really, you know, we focused hard on the fundraising, and we've been successful in the fundraising side. But I've kind of grown tired of watching, you know, candidates through the years that believe all they need to do is just do the fundraising side. And I think it's important that we really connect with voters when we get in campaigns. And some candidates do that well, and other candidates don't. And I think we've been successful in making sure that as we meet voters, that they know that I appreciate their vote, that I want them to hear why I'm running for Secretary of State, and be able to, you know, as many times as possible, be able to deliver that message in person. And so that's something that we're proud of. We've knocked on literally, I think, over 40,000 doors already. Our campaign team has. We're going to continue door knocking every day up until the election, making sure that people, especially since, you know, I haven't run statewide before, I think it's important that you try to get people to at least be familiar with, you know, who you are as a candidate and what your beliefs are as you're running. And so we feel very good at this point, but we know we've got a lot more work to do before August 7th to make sure we can pass that day.
Well, I know that you guys have been working hard. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we kind of jumped on this ballot language for Proposition E, and I know that you jumped on it right away as well. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, I'm just hot over this Proposition E ballot language. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't believe it was accidental. You know, I know that nobody's really touched on that, but the ballot language is atrocious. You know, what they did was this ballot language went through the legislature. The ballot initiative went through the legislature, was passed by both houses, and nothing was ever put in the language to deal with that ballot language. And then they just handed Robin Carnahan a gift tied up with a bow, and she ran with it. So
right, well, and that's where, you know, part of our message is, and I don't know. I was clearly supportive of the legislation. I am not positive as to why the people that were close to that bill didn't put the language in there. But one of the things I've asserted is we've been out there visiting people. It's really up until Robin Carnahan, you did not have the absolute bias and, I think, willingness to try to tip the outcomes of ballot measures like you've seen with Robin Carnahan. You know, there's been, you know, issues, you know, I think, you know, some people were upset when Becky Cook was there because she held the, you know, the boards open too long when they were trying to elect the speaker back there when she was Secretary of State. But you never had any accusations, you know, during her time and other Secretary of State's time regarding ballot language, you know, when there were Democrats that were Secretary of State. And so one of the things I think is really important that I think we need to think about is balloting issues often, you know, they can be put on the ballot like Proposition E was by the legislature. But as you know, one of the important reasons you have ballot initiatives is that when you have those time periods when the legislature is ignoring the will of the people, that the people have a remedy, and that is being able to go through the ballot. So clearly you have to go out there, you have to get the number of signatures required to be able to get your initiative on the ballot, and then you put that before the people and they get to vote on it. But right now, other than the Secretary of State, who's been elected by the people every 4 years, the voice of the people is clearly not being heard and listened to when it comes to the right to ballot issues. And so we proposed a bill late last year to address this, and I will tell you that we've had some very good suggestions that have come forward since I proposed this legislation. We've made a couple changes to it. But the main idea behind it is that there is a system of accountability that can hold each Secretary of State accountable that gives people the opportunity not to have to go through the court system they do now. Because right now, if you believe ballot language is unfair, your only recourse is to go through the courts. Well, not only is that a costly endeavor, it's also going to be a very time-consuming endeavor that a lot of times, especially when it's driven by citizens, they're not going to have time to do. So what we proposed is that be a volunteer citizen commission. Originally, we had put into the idea that it would be legislators, some people came up and they said, you know, I think that we need to put, you know, citizens on that, because if it's going to be the citizens' voice, it ought to be citizens and not legislators. So we've made that change to it. And then the other change we've made is that the only time this commission would be brought forth is when people, you know, take a look at the language and they say, you know what, this is unfair, it's biased or misleading. And I think that brings it back to the founding, you know, father's idea that we the people always needs to be front and center. And it goes back to what you were both talking about earlier, and that is accountability. And I frankly have grown tired of people in elected office who don't want to be held accountable and don't want to listen to the people that they serve. And I think it's extremely important that when you're elected office, you be willing to admit that there's the reason our country was founded was because our founding fathers saw what happened in England when you have one person who's unwilling to listen to people they're supposed to be serving. And so it's basically founded upon that idea, and we're putting it forth out there. And I think Robin Carnahan has been a perfect example of why we need this type of a measure passed into law for the citizens of the state of Missouri.
Absolutely. Well, I know that you and Ed Martin went on a campaign trail on that very issue, and you campaigned together a little bit about that. And something that's been an issue, I know here in St. Louis, I'm not sure how much of an issue it is across the state or maybe even in Kansas City, but we'd like to have dead people vote all the time here in St. Louis. And,
mm-hmm.
and some of us think that it's maybe influenced elections in the past.
It has. Well, and did you see the story of what happened in Kentucky today?
No.
The feds uncovered a scam down there of them buying votes, and it hit Fox News earlier today.
Well, don't they call that welfare and entitlement program?
Well, it's something, but they're clearly you know, when you hear voter fraud doesn't happen, here's one more example of where it happened.
So have you got a plan for the dead people in St. Louis City?
Well, one of the things that I have been talking about is I think the Secretary of State's office needs to be more willing to roll up their sleeves and come into these areas where you've got too many people on the voter rolls, whether they've moved or whether they've passed away, because you, as you well know, there are unfortunately local election officials who are not doing their job to remove those people who are no longer living from the voter rolls. You know, Pew Center did a report earlier this year, and nationwide there's 1.8 million people no longer living that have remained on the voter rolls. And
yeah,
so,
I think we have some counties in Missouri with that problem.
Yeah, Reynolds County has 25% more people on the voter rolls than people that actually live in the county. And that's where I think it's important when you're in elected office. I don't want to just go in and pass mandates and pass. We want to come alongside these local election officials and say, okay, we've got a problem, and we're going to work with you to solve it. And that's going to be our first course of action. Now, begin to resist, and they show obstinance, you know, to trying to correct the problem, then we'll, you know, look at other solutions that can hopefully correct that problem for people in the local area. Now, part of the issue that we deal with is there's some pretty strict federal regulations that you've got to follow when it comes to cleaning up your voter rolls. But clearly, you have counties who do it the right way, and so we're going to work with them and make sure that they come alongside and help us with local election officials that live near them get these problems corrected. Because the last thing we want is, you know, Rasmussen did a poll this year, 60% of the American electorate believes that some sort of voter fraud occurs in each election in which they cast the ballot. And you and I both know the more people believe that there's tampering of the election in which they participate, the less likely they're going to show up and vote. And then what happens? It becomes that much easier for voter fraud to be successful when you're taking the legitimate voters out of the equation.
Right. Well, Shane, it sounds like if you get elected in November that you've got a lot of mess to clean up following Carnahan in that office.
We do, and that's one of the things I called for earlier this year was an independent election commission. We're going to get citizens, local election officials, and we're going to look at best practices across the nation, and we're going to look at cleaning up our voter laws and cleaning up our voter rolls here in the state of Missouri so that every time Missourians go to vote, they know they're protected. You know, I support photo ID. I also support better verification of your citizenship as a citizen of this nation when you register to vote. And the state of Colorado in 2010 had almost 12,000 aliens registered to vote. They may be here legally, but they shouldn't be voting. Out of that, almost 5,000 people cast a ballot that should have never cast a ballot. Well, John McCain only won the state of Missouri in 2008 by less than 4,000 votes. And so it is a serious problem that I take seriously. And
so
I'm looking
Secretary, as Secretary of State, how can you help push that along, that voter ID?
Well, I think one of the things we've had a problem with in the past 8 years is Robin Carnahan, every step of the way since 2006, has clearly been an obstacle to getting photo ID passed. And so I think when you get a Secretary of State who's willing to work with the legislature, we'll have a lot better opportunity to get it passed. Now, unfortunately, the ballot measure that would have allowed citizens to vote on it was refused by the courts, and I think that we have another chance this next session to be able to get that before the House and Senate and get that passed so that in 2014, you know, voters can vote on photo ID, because I think it's absolutely essential. But we've got to get in the Constitution first. Unfortunately,
does it have to be a constitutional amendment? Or can it not be legislation?
That's what I'm saying. That was thrown out of the courts threw it off of the ballot earlier this year because they disagreed with the ballot summary language, ironically. And so that's something that we want to get fixed, and that's another reason why I think having the Fair Ballot Accountability Act will help correct problems like that.
So what my question is can the legislature pass it? Does it have to go to the voters?
Yeah, the legislature did. And matter of fact, I even had legislation to try to get back on the ballot. Unfortunately, it failed in the Senate.
But it has to go to the ballot.
Now, I passed photo ID legislation earlier in the year in the House that would have been the statutory provision that would have allowed the law to be carried out once it was passed in the Constitution.
Okay.
But clearly, and that's what happened in 2006. The courts threw it out saying you cannot implement photo ID without it being in the state constitution, and so that's why the constitutional question was going to be put before the voters, and unfortunately it's not going to be.
Now, I don't know as much about this subject as I probably should, but do other states have voter ID, and is it a constitutional issue for them?
I could not answer if every state's a constitutional question, if it's in the constitution, because in state by state it depends upon if their laws have been challenged. Kansas has it. They just adopted it. Indiana has it. Georgia has it. And there's about, four or five other states that I believe have some form of photo ID. And of course, Pennsylvania right now is probably front and center in their photo ID law that they just passed.
Okay. Well, Shane Scholer, running for Secretary of State here in Missouri. Shane, how can people get a hold of you if they want to get involved in your campaign?
Well, they can go straight to my website, which is shaneschoeller.org. That's shaneschoeller.org. And that has all the contact information by email, phone, that they would be able to get in contact with us. And we'd be very appreciative of any help that anybody wants to give.
We appreciate you being with us tonight, Shane. I hope you do well with your campaign and we can get some of this mess cleaned up left over from Ron and Carnahan.
Absolutely. Well, that's our intent. We're going to keep working towards that. So I sure appreciate it, Lisa.
Okay. Thanks, Shane. Have a good evening.
All right. You guys have a good evening, too.
Okay. We'll be right back. Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details. Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. bad government, and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Okay, we're back. Welcome back to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We are headlong into the primary season, and we have been just full of candidate interviews. And tonight, we are happy to have with us Brad Lager. Let's go to Brad Lager. We're back. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Culture Vigilante Hour, and this is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm your host for this hour. We're fortunate enough tonight to have with us Brad Lager, candidate for Lieutenant Governor. Thanks for being with us today, Brad.
Lisa, thanks for having me on. I greatly appreciate it.
I know you've been busy. You've spent a lot of time here the last few days in St. Louis, but you've been all over the state campaigning very hard. You have one challenger, Peter Kinder, for this primary on August 7th. And you want to tell me a little bit about how your campaign's been going?
You know what? It's absolutely great. This is a cycle where people realize that we have to make decisions. And if you keep doing what you're doing, we're going to keep getting what we're getting. And the number one thing I hear is this is a cycle where we need new blood. We need a new vision. And the reality is if we want to change the direction of our state, you've got to change the leaders in our state. So it's going absolutely great. This is a time in the campaign where there's a lot of energy, a lot of people very enthusiastic about helping change the direction of our state. So for me, it's absolutely great.
Well, okay, so let's talk about changing the direction of our state. We've had a Republican-led House and Senate for a while now. A lot of the grassroots folks don't really believe that that's been advantageous to us. There's been a lot of hanky-panky going on, and maybe some things not going in the direction we think it needs to be going. As Lieutenant Governor, you know, presiding over the Senate, how do you see your role in that, in making that a little bit clearer, a little bit more defined conservative effort?
You know, Lisa, what you just mentioned there in the challenges that have plagued the Republicans over the last few years, that's one of the reasons I'm running for Lieutenant Governor. You know, well, I remember when Matt Blunt became governor, and I remember those first couple years doing a lot of great stuff, workers' comp, tort reform, things that were really moving us forward as a state. I felt like we were finally getting our hands around the budget. But the reality is since, you know, about the 2006-2007 time frame on, what happened is Republicans just kind of started managing the status quo. And then you're watching states like Wisconsin and Florida and Texas and other places where they're really taking this free market fight right to the people. And the people are saying, yeah, that's what we need. We need more private sector. And so one of the reasons, is the primary reason that I got involved in public policy is because I believe that the private sector will always do a better job of meeting the needs of society than a big government program. And why I believe the Lieutenant Governor's office is a great place to fight from is because, number one, the Lieutenant Governor, that is one of the only offices in our state that has both a role in the legislative branch and a role in the executive branch. As you mentioned, from the legislative branch perspective, it is the one spot in state government where you actually, the top constitutional responsibility is to preside over the Senate and cast votes when there's a tie. But you also have the executive responsibilities of sitting on many boards and commissions, being an advocate for seniors, being an advocate for veterans, where you literally have the ability to get into the inner workings and fundamentally start to change the way government works, fundamentally start to change the way people think about government and the expectations. And, you know, that's what's missing today. We are still operating in the state of Missouri under a structure of our government that was established in the 1970s. That's crazy. Not a business in this country
agree with you. Let's talk about an issue. We here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition have been kind of fired up over an issue that came up a couple weeks ago, SB 464. That was the health insurance exchange bill. That was the bill that went through the House and the Senate, and it didn't have ballot language attached to it, which is really the issue that kind of has us all fired up. You supported that bill, and Robin Carnahan got a hold of it and just made a travesty out of it. And it looks as if, in whatever attempt that the House and the Senate made to keep Governor Nixon from having carte blanche in initiating insurance exchanges in Missouri, that kind of went out the window when they gave that when Robin Carnahan got a hold of that ballot language. And shortly after that, you issued a call for the governor to go into special session to initiate some so that the legislature could initiate some changes to get out of that situation of implementing Obamacare. So
right. I believe strongly that Missouri needs to take a stand right now and tell the federal government we are not going to implement Obamacare. I believe that the reason the legislature should be called back into special session to run concurrent with veto session is because just like there are governors across the country right now saying, no, federal government, we're not going to do it. We're not going to implement your Medicaid growth. We're not going to grow the state programs. But at the same time, we are not going to implement the insurance exchange either. And the reason I think it's important, Lisa, and why this fight is so important is because right now two things are happening. Number one, the federal government is doing everything it can since the court case, since the Supreme Court made its decision, to try to force the states to implement it. They are doing everything they can to push forward. So whether Obama wins or loses, this is as far down the road as possible. There are many governors who have said, we're not going to do it. Now, the other reason that I believe Missouri needs to make a definitive statement that we are not going to do it, be decisive on this, is because right now everyone understands that in order to grow the Medicaid roll to the point that the federal government wants you to grow, the only way to pay for that will be future tax increases. And as businesses look throughout the country at places where they would possibly want to relocate, where they would possibly want to go, where they want to grow, the reality is any business, whether it's already in our state or it's looking at coming to our state, is going to be reluctant to do major investment if they think there's a potential of a massive tax increase in the future. So this is about it's about economic certainty. It's about tax certainty for our every business in the state. It's about making sure that the citizens of our state know that we're not going to raise taxes on them. But most importantly, it's also about the fundamental fight that the solutions to the challenges that face healthcare is not going to come through bigger government programs. That's why I called for the special session. That's why I think it's vitally important we do everything we can to tell the federal government we're not going to be part of Obamacare, and why it's also important, to your point, that this horrible language that Robin Carnahan has put on this initiative, that we do what we can to fight it. And you know, it's disappointing because typically when the legislature puts an initiative on the ballot, they write the language, the ballot language. For whatever reason, the General Assembly failed to do its job in this case and didn't do that. And Robin Carnahan has implemented, in my opinion, some of the worst language that I have seen during her time as Secretary of State. And she's done some pretty bold stuff over there in terms of being very one-sided, very liberal with the way that she interprets ballot initiatives.
Okay, I'm going to challenge you a little bit here because you supported SB 464 for the legislature to be the ones to implement the insurance exchanges. You know, if Obamacare doesn't get flipped in November, it's my understanding the legislature wanted to be in control of that and not give that control to the executive office. Okay, but your call for an executive session was more of a nullification call, along with things like the initiatives that Jindal is proposing and the other governors in some other states. Is that correct?
That's correct. My call was about stopping the expansion of Medicaid so that we have the budget certainty and the tax certainty that I think is important for economic growth.
Okay. And not to deal with the insurance exchange language.
That, right. My special session call didn't call for that because of timing. Because it's a September, it would be a September call.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure that we would have the time to fix the language to get it on the ballot in November.
Right. Okay. Okay, let's talk a little bit. About a week or so ago, you kind of got called out in some blogs and by some radio people here in St. Louis about being financed by stimulus and Obamacare. You are an employee of Cerner. Cerner does data collection. They manufacture data collection software for the medical industry. And there's some question there as to your role in that whole situation. Do you want to kind of clarify that a little bit? You have received campaign finance from Cerner in the past. And you do play a role in their company for whatever reason. So is there a connection between you and the support of Obamacare stimulus?
Well, let me be very clear. I do not support Obamacare. I do not support the growing of government, and I do not support any of the bailout programs that the federal government put forward. And in fact, I would go a step further to say that I have fought adamantly in the state of Missouri for us to live within our financial means and not go create the type of irresponsible debt they've been creating in Washington. Now, to your point, I do work for a company by the name of Cerner. Cerner is a company that's trying to fix healthcare. Cerner builds software, i.e. digital healthcare records for hospitals, doctors. I do not work in any area of Cerner that advocates for or promotes Obamacare. I actually work with a team that works on creating networks. So how do you connect different doctors? How do you connect different hospitals so they can share information in a private way? But most importantly, if you build that network right, what you do is you create a system by which you and I as consumers now have the ability to control our healthcare data. And the reason that becomes important is because if we have better information as consumers, we can make better decisions. So I believe the solution to our healthcare challenges is not Obamacare. I believe that the solution to our challenges will not come from government. I believe the solutions to our challenges will come from empowering individuals, you and I, to make our own decisions about what healthcare we need or our family needs, and not some government bureaucrat or some board in Jefferson City or Washington, D.C.
But just to be clear, just so that you have the opportunity, you know, to face this accusation here, as an employee of Cerner, and Cerner, you know, Cerner has not renounced the Obamacare situation. They you know, may or may not support it completely, but they haven't renounced it. Just as you just did, you have received campaign funds for them, and you have been accused of being a lobbyist at times for Cerner.
I have received campaign contributions from Cerner. I don't believe I've received anything directly from the company since 2009. Now, one of the founders of the company is a dear personal friend of mine. He and his wife have supported me, are supporting me. And you know what? He's an entrepreneur. He's a guy that 30 years ago started a company from nothing and today employs over 10,000 people. I want more entrepreneurs like that supporting me. But let me be clear. I'm not in a position at Cerner to decide whether Cerner supports Obamacare or doesn't support Obamacare. What I'm telling you is, as the lieutenant governor of this state, I will get up every day and do everything I can to fight against Obamacare and to fight any other big government intrusion the federal government is pushing down. But let's be really clear here. The reality is that these attacks and the accusations that are coming out of my opponent's camp just underscores the concern of where we are. You know, it's not uncommon in politics for politicians, for really career politicians, to attack companies. But it normally comes from Democrats, not Republicans. And I think that what's really concerning for me in this situation is the lies that are being put out there. I'm not a lobbyist, Lisa. I never have been, and I have no intent of ever being one. I'm a guy who gets up every day with a strong belief in the private sector. It's why I got involved in public policy. And I believe that if we don't have more people involved that understand, if we don't have more people involved who understand that this country is built upon a strong and vibrant private sector and not a big government solution, I mean, that's part of what's happening now. We have too many people in Congress and too many career politicians like my opponent who believe the solutions are more government. It's not more government. It's get government out of the way.
Right. Okay, very good. Brad Lager, Lieutenant Governor candidate for the state of Missouri, the August 7th primary is the big day. Brad, how can people get a hold of you if they want to get involved in your campaign?
Absolutely. Go to our website. Go to my website at www.bradlager.com and send us an email. We'll be in touch, and we look forward to continuing to grow our group of volunteers and supporters. And it's a great time. The campaign's well, and I appreciate, Lisa, you willing to take a few minutes to have me on today.
Oh, we appreciate having you here. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. Okay, go to Brad Lager's website, support him, take a look at both of the candidates, make a decision, and we'll be right back. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
With the August primary looming in about 7 weeks, we find the time is running out on who we vote for. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Do the representatives we send to Jefferson City really care what you think, or do they do the bidding of the special interest groups and lobbyists? It's your choice. You can elect a true citizen legislator or an establishment politician who takes his marching orders from the party elitists and his donors. Either way, time is running out for our state and country. Hear the clock of freedom ticking? I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
To Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. Tonight we have with us Congressman Todd Akin. He's running for U.S. Senate for Missouri. He's got two challengers in the August 7th primary, and he hopes to go up against Claire McCaskill on November 7th and unseat her and put another Republican in that seat in the United States Senate to hopefully eliminate some things like Obamacare and put us back on a constitutional path. Thank you for being with us today, Congressman Akin.
Well, it's a pleasure to join you, Lisa, and your great audience.
The Grassroots is happy to have you here. We're interested to hear in how your campaign is going. I was kind of thinking about your race here. I mean, you had a pretty safe seat in that congressional district there. I really don't think you would have been challenged in a primary there, and you've been there for a while. You've been doing good work there. What on earth are you thinking?
Well, you know, if you're thinking in terms of just a nice, safe seat and cruising along, that's fine, but it's not working right now. Let me tell you, our country is about to blow up. The numbers from a deficit point of view, $1 trillion a year deficits, what the Federal Reserve is doing, the taking God out of the military, trying to force gay marriages into the military and chaplains. You could look at it from a whole lot of different angles, or just the businesses that are being destroyed by over-aggressive bureaucratic agencies. No matter how you slice it, we don't have but a couple more years to go before we become a very, very different country than we've ever been before. And this is a time for patriots to get up and go and not to sit around and just try and do what's safe and comfortable. My belief is I've called my children as they were growing up. We had homeschooled our kids 27 years. And we taught them there's some things more valuable than life itself, and that is to protect our God-given right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so they did that. They served in the Marine Corps. A number of my sons are still in the Marine Corps, and I'm not going to let them do that and I just sit around. So I decided burn the bridges behind, run for the U.S. Senate, because there are two things we have to do, even in the short term, to not just take our country back, but to try to keep our country. One, we've got to get rid of Barack Obama. Two, we've got to get rid of Claire McCaskill. And I'm rated the most conservative congressman in the state of Missouri. I believe there was a reasonable chance we could beat Claire McCaskill. The polling data says that I could beat her now by 8 points. And so making that decision, we gave up on the congressional seat and said we're going to run for the Senate.
Well, that brings up a very good question. The campaign, one of your challengers has kind of taken the negative campaigning tactic to a new level in the primary, and there's been a lot of negative campaigning against you and your other challenger.
Not just kind of. He's really got an entire factory of mud-spraying equipment.
Yeah, absolutely. And generally you don't tend to see that in a Republican primary, which is kind of surprising.
You haven't seen it from me. I believe that the public really wants a vision of what our country is, where we need to go. They want people to look beyond themselves and to unite us behind the same common vision that made America the greatest nation in the world. So we just don't do any of that mudslinging.
Well, and oftentimes also when you have negative campaigning, people will level accusations at you, and that kind of goes out there into the atmosphere, and that's all people really hear, but you don't hear the other side of it. So this is a very good opportunity for you to tell us some of the things that we're hearing about you is that you voted 4 times to raise the debt limit. So we'd kind of like to hear your side of that story there.
Sure, that's easy to do. Okay, let's do the most recent, which is 2011, okay? We've got a government that's about to melt down because of excessive spending, and the question is whether or not we're going to raise Obama's credit card limit. We've already spent the money, but the question is, are we going to pay the money that we've spent, okay? So everybody's backing and filling, 6 months worth of negotiating, going nowhere. And so a bunch of us conservatives said, look, there is only one or two tools that actually work to force a government to be smaller and to be leaner. And those are the only two things I've ever seen in history that work. The first is what we do in Missouri that's called the Hancock Amendment, which is basically mathematically putting a cap on the size of government. In other words, you say the federal government cannot grow bigger than this percentage of the overall gross domestic product of the country. If the country's economy goes down, then the government has to shrink. That's the way the government is in Missouri, and it's called capping the size of the federal government. The other one is a balanced budget amendment. Both of those need to be amendments to the U.S. Constitution. So we took the debt ceiling and called the liberals bluff, and we put a balanced budget amendment on it and severe caps to the government and reduction in spending. And we said, if you get those things done, then you can increase the credit card. In other words, if you solve the problem, then we're allowing you to increase the debt ceiling temporarily to get it fixed. And so did I vote for an increase of the debt ceiling? Yes, coupled with a balanced budget amendment. Of course, my opponent has never said he would have voted against a balanced budget amendment, which he would have done if he'd voted no. He just gives the innuendo that I'm for big spending. That doesn't even make sense. I'm the most conservative congressman in the state of Missouri. The big debt ceiling increase occurred August 2nd. And I was one of the 66 courageous conservative Republicans that voted against the Speaker of the House of our own party, against John Boehner. I voted against Boehner, and I voted against the debt ceiling increase and, by the way, the 10% cut to defense, which went along with it. So that's an example of a
kind of a mudslinging allegation. The implication was that I voted for the debt ceiling that Boehner had, which cut defense and increased the debt ceiling for the president. The fact is, no, I voted against that. What I did vote for was a balanced budget and severe and stiff cuts to federal spending. And, of course, that's the way negative advertising works. You tell a half-truth, which becomes a whole lie.
Right. And if I recall correctly, you also voted against No Child Left Behind. Is that also true?
I am the only congressman in the state of Missouri that voted against No Child Left Behind. My very first vote as a congressman, one of the first bills, that was H.R. 1 that President Bush brought out. And I believe in local control of schools. I don't even believe there should be a Department of Education. So most certainly I was not going to vote to increase the size and the power of the Department of Education. That's why I voted no.
And Congressman Aiken is also a supporter of Homeschooling United's Educational Freedom Pledge, and you can all go to the Homeschooling United website and see him listed among the supporters there. Congressman Aiken?
I'm also endorsed by Homeschool Legal Defense, but the guy that started HSLDA.
Michael Ferris?
Michael Ferris has endorsed me in our race for the Senate.
Oh, very good.
Also, David Barton, some of your listeners may know that David Barton's also endorsed us.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, let's talk about earmarks. Okay, there's a lot of information and floating around out there about your support of pork barrel earmarks and pork barrel spending.
There's also information saying I'm the same as Obama. I wouldn't believe everything that a millionaire wants to put on the air, though.
Well, can you kind of address any of those allegations
about the federal
budget? And
look, first thing off, earmarks is a slippery term. You have to know what you're talking about. The thing that most people think of when they hear the word earmarks is the idea that legislators slip pork into a bill at the last minute. Nobody knows what's in there. They vote on it, and then they find out something was included and slipped in the dark of night. I'm completely against that. I have worked on legislation to prevent that from happening, and so I'm totally against that and understand the problem. The other thing, though, is that people want to go so far with this that they're basically getting rid of Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution. That says Congress has the responsibility to spend money, and I am unwilling to emasculate the Constitution to make the Congress absolutely powerless and to give all spending authority over to Obama and all of his bureaucratic agencies. I don't go there. And so when people, for instance, in a committee, in a subcommittee, make an amendment, for instance, in my case, to change something that the Pentagon budget is wanting to do, and then it's voted and approved, and it goes to committee and it's approved, it's completely in the daylight. Everybody sees what it is. They see the reason for doing it. It goes to the floor, is voted on. That is the legislative process. There's nothing wrong with that. And I have voted for things that are just eminently common sense. For instance, I pushed the Navy for 2 or 3 years in a row, instead of buying F-18s 1 year at a time, to do a multi-year contract. And so I kept pushing them to do that with amendments that I made. Some people might call those earmarks. And the result was we saved $600 million for the federal government by getting the Navy to buy the F-18s on a multi-year contract. That allows the manufacturer to get the materials at a lower cost. It gives people a sense of security in their job because they know they're making a 5-year run of a certain number of planes per year. It makes the cost go down. It's like buying at a discount store. You can get a lower price if you're willing to buy more quantity. So that's just common sense. And to try to say that you can't do things like that or criticize someone for saving $600 million of taxpayers' money, well, I don't think that makes a lot of sense.
Let's talk about Obamacare for just 1 minute. I mean, that's what's foremost on everybody's mind this election cycle. Do you have a plan for attacking this Obamacare issue? And do you think that it's reasonable to think that we can get the entire thing repealed if we, you know, do well in the November elections?
You'd have to do very well, but it is possible. What you'd have to get would be 60 votes in the Senate, which I think is the hardest thing. You have to have a Republican president that has the guts to just repeal the whole thing, which is what I would do, what I've said repeatedly. And if you had that and the House maintains the Republican control of the House, we just flat repeal the whole thing, and that's what I would do if it were up to me. Said that often. I'm one of the five original members of the Tea Party Caucus in Washington, D.C. Michelle Bachmann, Steve King, myself, and several others, all of those people have endorsed me. And we fought for years against Obamacare, and I wouldn't rest till every last sentence is repealed. But that said, Obamacare is like a big giant that's running around the land destroying things. And the best way to deal with that is everybody, every way you can, try to stop it. That means we try to stop it in the courts. We try to stop it. The best single thing we have is to try to defund it, because now the court has described it as a tax. We can then put that into a special process that does not require 60 votes in the Senate, and we may be able to defund it, but we just have to take it apart one piece at a time, dismantle it, and throw it out.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking here with Congressman Todd Akin, candidate for U.S. Senate in the great state of Missouri. Congressman Akin, how can people get a hold of you if they want to help you with your campaign?
Well, we would appreciate that. The best thing to do is probably either go to the website, that would be Akin, AKIN.org, or they could give us a call over at the campaign, which is 636-207-7986. We have got a fantastic team on the ground. We are, in terms of staffing events around the state, we're doing a very good job. The Huckabee ads, I think, are doing well. We've set a high standard. We're not slinging mud or criticizing our opponents. And I believe that that's because the problems that America has are not going to be fixed by mudslinging and political little one-liners. I believe the real problem in America is that we have to recall who we are as a nation, that we are one nation under God, that our Creator blessed us with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those gifts come from God. They don't come from a president or the Supreme Court or any tyrant. Those are things that every citizen needs to stand up and uphold. We need to turn back to God, start doing things His way, and we have to stop increasing the size of federal government and expecting the government to do everything for us. That means get the government out of all kinds of things that it's doing now that it shouldn't be doing.
Thank you, Congressman Akin. Best of luck to you and your campaign. Go to Akin.org if you want to get involved in Congressman Akin's campaign for U.S. Senate. Thank you for being with us today, Congressman.
Lisa, it's a pleasure to join you.
Okay. The hour flew by really fast. Want to remind you of a couple things. Go to the forum page and keep working with those updates there for the legislative ballot language for the Missouri grass fire alerts. We're going to keep you posted on that. Go to the page for the Secret Santa. Give us a couple dollars this week. We're trying to raise some money to help some Missouri families out for Christmas. We're thinking ahead. Don't want to wait until the last minute at Christmas time to get to do that. So go to that page and send us a couple dollars through PayPal, check, or money order. Check out the whole entire blog page for Missouri Grassroots Coalition. You can find me at culturevigilante.wordpress.com. And drop by Homeschooling United and look at the updated list for those that support homeschooling and educational freedom across Missouri. That's it for tonight. We'll see you next week on Missouri Grassroots Radio here in the Culture Vigilante Hour. We'll be talking about ballot language initiatives and working with some Yankee Doodle legislation alerts. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.